Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is the weekly show brought to you by Levi Solicitors. You can get a 10% discount on your legal fees if you go to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Michael, take us down the legal services that they provide for the good people.
You're going to miss teeing this up.
Very much so.
It's been such a week for you, hasn't it? Oh. To do the Levi's tee up. Yeah, they do all the ones I mentioned previously, such as your wills, your probate, your conveyancing, your dispute resolution, personal, commercial, property, all your disputes, all your powers of attorney, all at Levi Solicitors.
.co.uk.
All mine.
They're all yours.
All your disputes, all my disputes. Yep. I don't have. What if I don't have any disputes?
Then you don't need the discount, but the listeners
go about your
might.
Business. I would avoid disputes where possible.
So this is not mandatory?
No, don't just...
Oh. I've been spending a fortune on legal advice. It's all been great. I can't fault the service I've had, but I have been wondering why I've been spending so much time in court when actually everything was fine.
Putting up fences that aren't meant to be there.
I just thought that was part of the deal.
Just walking around causing arguments to get 10% off.
Just if there was no dispute, there was no resolution, and I wanted some resolution, so I needed a dispute.
Well, you can get a 10% discount on any of your legal fees if you go to www.levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. So on today's show is myself again, Dean Smith, Michael Normanton and Daniel Chapman Moscowite. Weekly show. Let's start with, of course, the most pressing issue, which is promotion watch. Let's just take a general temperature check in the room. How are we feeling, Moscow?
Going up.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Champions?
That's my temperature, or I don't know about Leeds. I don't know about champions because I just got that Ipswich.
Mm.
I mean, I think every year, probably all you have to say to a Leeds fan at the moment is you just say Ipswich, and we all just go,
yeah,
we know what that means. We know what that word contains, and then the inevitable next words are they can't keep doing it, can they? But they might. So
they must feel the same about us. That's the one thing I always think in this situation is that as much as we're annoyed at them, they must be annoyed at us because we were miles behind them at one point.
I don't think they're annoyed about anything. I tried to...
Quite reasonable.
My report on the whole game when we had the weekend of matches that we're talking about was Leicester seem agitated, we are tense, and then Ipswich are just joyful. Because they keep winning every game in the 95th minute. When Dan James scored in the 95th minute for us, it's a massive sense of relief. Just, thank God we're not going to lose 3-2. But when Ipswich keep doing it, it might just be when you were in League One a year ago, it's like, fucking hell, this is great. How does this keep happening? Brilliant. I worry that that's just going to... I mean, if it carries them offline, great. It is a great story. And I just don't... I think the mystery here is because we're not seeing it at close quarters. It's just how the hell Leif Davis is just dragging this team to the Premier League on his own.
I think we've had a little touch of the Ipswiches over the last couple of games, you know, rescuing a point quite late, rather adding 2 points against Hull on Monday. So yeah, Michael, temperature check.
Yeah, we've had a fair share, haven't we? Because we've not actually played that well in quite a few games recently.
Mm.
Leicester, we were not good for the majority. We weren't terrible, but we weren't obviously the better team in that. You could say the same for Hull. Could definitely say the same about the first half at Watford.
Well, yeah. It was the international break, wasn't it? It's fucked us. Like, coming back from that, we looked like a different team for a lot of it. And like we said, I think it was yesterday, about that first game back at Watford, we just wanted the referee to just let the players just play the football. Don't kick them too much. But this week, looking ahead to this weekend, early kickoff with Ipswich, Norwich, Ipswich. Ooh, that's got a little spice, hasn't it?
I was kind of relying on, because Norwich have been in good form, haven't they, until they went to Leicester and were completely shit.
Although Andy Hughes with his set piece, got to keep that in the forefront of our minds, and he will hopefully, because it's not only that Norwich have to be Ipswich for local bragging rights, but Hughes' dog should be in there just pointing out that, like, please, it's not like it would have been roles reversed when Richard Naylor was at Ipswich singing Marching On Together in the showers. We have Hughes' dog singing it in the showers at Norwich, hopefully with good effect.
Yeah, why is he in the showers if he's not playing?
Yeah, I started thinking that. But
it's just like an enthusiastic PE teacher.
Yeah.
Everyone's PE teachers did that, no?
We'll talk about that afterwards, mate.
Okay.
He could be just outside the showers singing while everybody else is having a wash.
Okay.
There we go.
Like keeping the morale up.
But yes. Norwich themselves do need something from this, probably, because they're sixth, aren't they, at the moment, with the Coventry 4 points behind, but game in hand, so it's all a bit... It's all a little bit tight and pressed and not far back either. So come on, Norwich. Please get a point.
We're all canaries at the 12:30 kickoff. Then Leicester at home to Birmingham. We probably can't ask for any miracles there, can we?
Not really.
Have Birmingham improved a bit now?
We've got Gary Rowett.
Rowett's there. I think they won a game, did they? Tyler Roberts is back.
There you go.
So there's another somebody else to help us in that game. Him and Cody Drama can do some stuff for us. Leicester, it depends whether King Power is going to be all fuck the EFL and PL siege mentality, or whether, as I hope, they're all just angry at each other and let Birmingham win. So that's the dream scenario. But yeah, it feels like a home win.
It does. And then on the sheet here, it has Blackburn, Southampton. Now they definitely
I'm still putting them on.
Yeah, they definitely need
Blackburn
to win
going
that.
Up.
Southampton are mathematically in touch. I don't want to make the mistake that Southampton Twitter account made of saying Southampton are out of the picture.
Yeah, and then they romp the league.
But they probably are, aren't they?
Russell Martin is still as delulu as ever. He said he wouldn't rule, he said if they play the way they played against Ipswich, they could still win all their remaining games, which would give them 98 points, and then it would be a rough ride on them if they didn't get promoted with 98 points, which... It feels like a lot of things have to happen for them to get to 98 points. They have to play as well as they did against Ipswich and not lose.
Yep.
That's a crucial thing that didn't happen there. And then do that 8 times in a row, but winning. And then also for us not to outperform them.
Because if we win 4 of our 6 games, we also get to that points total.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's nice to sort of take the high road here and keep them in our thoughts. But that does feel more like kind of playoff preparation watch.
Yes.
And than then, actual auto watch.
I am pleased to have the games less spread out, at least. I've absolutely hated this Easter thing of managing to make the day last from like 12:30 or whatever it is to bloody 10 at night.
You know who you can blame for that?
Sean Harvey.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
What was he doing for 3 days?
What was Joseph doing? Did you do any? Well, we had the Easter discussion, didn't we, what Joseph was up to? Did you get any close to an answer?
No further. No, he just wasn't involved. But
just taking advantage of the bank holiday, probably.
Yeah, 3 days. Probably worrying about Southampton's score.
Yeah, he's in a beer garden somewhere. So kicking off at the same time as Leicester versus Birmingham and Blackburn versus Southampton is the big game, us away at Coventry. We're going to preview this properly with Phil when he comes in a little bit later on. But this was the one that I was looking at a couple of games ago and thinking it was going to be the most... tough, I think. But then they lost the other day, did they not? So it may be a good time to
finish
play
club.
Them. You said it. I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah, they lost at home to Cardiff, didn't they? Which isn't great, because Cardiff are very, very much mid-table, aren't they, this season?
Mm.
The whole thing might have changed upon Mark Robbins bullying a ball boy so hard they had to change the rules.
Yes. What's that? I've missed this.
So against Wolves when they beat them in the FA Cup, he went mad at a ball boy at Molyneux for taking too long to put a ball back in play. And now the rules have all changed. So that now the ball, people can only put the balls on a cone and a player can only retrieve a ball from a cone or near a cone. You can no longer have one thrown to you from a ball child.
What will happen if you do?
I assume...
Will the ref make you put it back on the cone and pick it up?
Mark Robbins is in his car. He's coming up to hand out a beating.
Was Mark Robbins against the quick passing of a ball then? or for it. I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Because they won that game late on, didn't they? I'm trying to think of the
It was for it. He was trying to get a ball off of the Wolves ball person to get it back into play. Ah, okay.
And then what happened was when they scored the late winner, he went and celebrated in the ball boy's face. That was the problem. I've remembered what the issue was now. And so he then, he apologised afterwards, but Gary O'Neill, the Wolves manager, wasn't having it. He was in his press conference. He was like, I think we need to be a bit better than celebrating in the face of a 12-year-old boy. And then that has inspired this mid-season rule change where, it's all about cones and no longer, which is a shame because it used to be there's that famous thing of, was it at Tottenham where the ball boy threw it back into play dead quick and Spurs scored and Jose Mourinho then went over and celebrated with the ball boy instead of, chucking him about and throwing him over, bashing his head off asphalt.
And Mark Robbins there doing his very best to cling on to the very remnants of his scum past just by getting into 12-year-olds' faces. Good for him.
Isn't the ball boy who put the ball down for Trent Alexander-Arnold to take that quick free kick, isn't he now like in Liverpool's first team or something as well? I can't remember which one he is.
Is it Conor Bradley or someone?
He's someone like that, yeah. He's like one of their youth players now who had his head on a swivel at 12 years old or something to be like, take this quickly.
Yeah, well, that's terrible. Jurgen Klopp. Social media clips of him going, oh yes, I remember that boy. Oh, is that the same boy? Oh, how incredible, which is why it would be good when Klopp's gone.
Yeah, such a special ball boy.
They invented ball boys, did the Scousers. We've got these things in Liverpool. They collect balls and they're boys and they call them ball boys.
Amazing.
And Mark Robbins. And if anyone's listened to the members show where we went through all the championship managers, did we have him down as the wrongest un? In the champo, he was pretty close to it, wasn't he?
He was low.
We didn't like him.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I think he might have been in the decimals. I think he might have got like 0.83 or something.
And we were right.
Correct. Yes, very much so. And then looking slightly further ahead into the midweek fixtures, we're at home to Sunderland, Leicester away at Millwall, and then Southampton have Coventry, and then on the Wednesday, Plymouth versus Leicester.
Seems like a tough old set of fixtures for Leicester.
Yeah.
Playing Millwall away on Tuesday and then Plymouth away on Wednesday. Yeah. Michael,
I think it's Friday. Sorry, is the I think they play on Wednesday against someone.
I mean, have we got the right games? Just the wrong days.
Just read that out and I didn't notice that. Good job, Moscow.
No, Leicester, the Plymouth game. Sorry, I think it's because Leicester play on they're also the Friday night game. They play Tuesday, Friday. Do Leicester? That's the mix up here. Sorry,
well, who are Ipswich playing?
Oh, I mean, I can't tell you that. But no, Leicester play, they play Birmingham, then they play Millwall Tuesday, Plymouth Friday.
Yeah, right. Correct.
No, and then, Plymouth on a Friday is a tough gig.
Yeah.
What day is the 10th?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. Oh. That's the Wednesday.
Right. Ipswich are at home to Watford on Wednesday night.
Home to Watford. Right, okay. But that's for another conversation.
And Watford,
no wonder Leicester hate the EFL if they've been made 2 days in a row.
Watford, of course, now under the guidance of Tom Cleverley, now they've got someone in who finally knows the club.
He knows the club.
They're going to win that one.
Knows the club twice over. But with all of these games that Leicester are seemingly playing, it brings us onto Leicester's money troubles. So me and you were talking about this, Moscow, before we started rolling on this. What kind of a fucking argument do they have? What is this about?
Well, I almost have like a tiny bit of sympathy because the rules are no good. But however, everybody knows the rules. The situation is that obviously they've been chuntering on about their PSR problems for a while, and they've already tried the gambit where it's like, oh no, well that happened in the Premier League and we're in the Football League now, so you can't do us for that. And then now they're like, well, oh, but this is the Football League, and like next year we'll be in the Premier League, so nobody can do us for that. So they're trying that little one where like nobody's rules apply to us is one thing. But then you'd sort of imagined when they were saying, oh, we're talking to the authorities and we're trying to find a way through this, that it might be close. But they, their total losses over the past 3 years are 215.3 million.
Yikes.
And the limit, if I remember correctly, is 89 million.
It's a long way off that. I know that much.
Yeah. They've more than, I think it might be 100. It's 105, isn't it? 105 over 3 years. So they've more than doubled what they are allowed to lose. So you'd think they were pretty much bang to rights. And their excuse doesn't actually really prevent any kind of bang to rights nuss, because they are saying that they did a really, really good budget. that was going to be within the PSR rules, but then it all went wrong and they didn't make as much money as they thought they would with their sensible budget. And so they should just be let off.
Yeah, well, the statement says here, for a club such as ours, whose sustained sporting achievements have justified the levels of investment required to compete with the most established clubs and pursue our ambition, a season of such significant underperformance on the pitch presents financial challenges, particularly from the perspective of the game's current profitability and sustainability rules. So basically they're saying, we had no idea we were going to be so shit and we spent a load of money.
Yeah. I mean, the slight argument is that, yes, it is very hard to budget to compete with the top clubs, and that's why the PSR rules are not great. But however, Leicester do have a big problem there, which is Brighton, who are swimming. The same day that Leicester announced all this, they announced £120 million record profits and they qualified for Europe. And it's like, well, our budget was all right. Don't know what your problem was. And they also have clubs like us who say, well, we budgeted within the rules and we got relegated. And the way that they are, there are two things that you know at the start of every season, whether the rules are fair or right or not. One is that if you exceed PSR, there will be sanctions. And maybe it's been a bit of a toothless tiger in the last few seasons where everyone's gone like, there won't be any sanctions though, will there? But now that threat was always there. You break the rules, there are sanctions. And it's exactly the same as if you have a bad season, you will get relegated. Those are the two things you know at the start of the season. So if the authorities say, you know what? Yeah, fair enough. Good budget. Sorry it went wrong. We won't punish you. We may as well also, they can come back to Leeds and say, you know what? You thought Brendan Aaronson was going to be great. Rasmus Christensen looked good on paper. Don't know why that went wrong. Tell you what, we won't relegate you because it wasn't really your fault you signed a load of players who were rubbish.
Yeah.
Shit happens. Sorry, guys. Stay in the Premier League. We won't worry about it. Weston McKennie was a big mistake. Jesse Marsh, who knew? You weren't to blame. So stay in the Premier League. You don't just get to do over because it went wrong.
No. They didn't roll their eyes and say, Sam Allardyce, what a laugh that was. Come on, come back in. Get a proper manager and see what's going on.
Anyway. I think the thing with the Brighton comparison is that was Leicester for a bit, wasn't it? They hit on success for a while. Yeah. They won the league, which was admittedly hugely unexpected, but then they did win the FA Cup. They finished in Europe. Things were going well. Radrizzani's on about the Leicester model. Now you look at Leicester and they're spending, the Swiss Ramble tweeted out a little chart, they spent 116% of their turnover on wages, which means that you've got less money.
Yeah.
It means you're spending more than you've got there. A turnover's not money that's left to spend, that's everything. That's all your money that comes in, you're spending it all on footballers. So there are ways this can work, but I mean, the rules are just shit, aren't they? And the fact that the rules are so, the main thing that needs to happen very clearly from this season and as needed to happen for years is that the Premier League and the EFL have some sort of joined up rule. So you get punished in whichever league you're in rather than, because the point where this normally goes wrong is when teams move between divisions, because you get teams spending loads to get out of the Championship and then they're kind of free from it. And you get teams coming down and then they have this Leicester bit where they go, oh, that was Premier League. So as long as you can get out straight away, you're fine there as well. If they had a joined up system where you went, there's some sort of staggering of it saying if your Premier League years, you're allowed this loss, your EFL years, you're allowed this loss, we then combine them. And it's an obvious way of doing it, but it requires some sort of logic from the people
running it. Like an independent regulator.
That sort of a thing would be able to do it.
The other thing where I have some sympathy for them is with the kind of the budget and things going wrong aspects is because of aligning it with accounts means we've always got this weird kind of retrospective business where you do have to predict that you will be within the PSR regulations. So Leicester have a point where we thought this season we set this budget that would have been within PSR, but then it all went wrong. We got relegated. That was a punishment. And now we're going to get punished again because going wrong took us out of the PSR limits. So my point is that you knew that before you started and not everybody else, but most other teams stayed within the rules. The change that would help that situation is to say that your PSR limit for next season is based on the money you had last season. So you're not having to predict. It's like you say, last year we made £100 million. So next year our PSR limit is X.
Yeah.
Instead of it being, well, we think that this year our revenue is going to be £100 million, but it might only be £50 million. So our PSR limit is going to be 70 million and then more. But if we don't have 50 million, and then it all goes wrong. So it's all too vague. It would be better if it was based on some kind of, we know that you had this, so that's what you can spend. And I don't know if that's how it's going to go, because the Premier League is still squabbling about what the new rules are going to be, because tied up with it is how much money they're willing to give to the EFL, which is basically zero. The government and the authorities are trying to drag something more than zero. I think it's about 20% that they've got to out of them for that. But the proposal is similar to what UEFA do, where it's based on revenue, and the starting point is you can spend 85% of your revenue, and then getting to the UEFA limit, which is 70% of revenue. And I don't know whether that's predicted revenue, or it's you made £100 million revenue last season, so you can spend 85 million next season, or trying to predict. It would be sensible if it was you made £100 million in 2022-23. In 2023-24, you can spend 85 million of that, because we know you've got it, and then that will be fine. The problem with that new thing is that I wonder if it doesn't help Brighton, who have relied a lot on Tony Bloom's money, because that's not revenue. That's an owner putting their money in. He then has to use his money to find ways for Brighton to make that money. And it fucks Newcastle as well, because Newcastle's kind of thing is, well, why can't we just put all this money into the club and spend it sustainably? So all those things still remain, that they will still favour clubs like Manchester City and their neighbours across the canal, who are swimming in revenue and just can keep spending it all. And it won't help Brighton continue to challenge them. Although, to be fair to Brighton, a lot of they are really, really good at revenue from transfers.
I was going to say, but a lot of it's player sales. It will come up against this next year. If we don't go up, we'll have to sell some players in summer to meet the rules for the forthcoming season. And at the moment, we're probably looking at it, and there are probably plans in place to go, all right, we don't go, Somerville goes, hopefully we'll get 35 million for him, we might get 25 for Nonto, and that solves it. But then, you know, Somerville gets clattered by some big championship bastard and breaks his femur. All of a sudden you go, well, we were going to sell him for 35 million quid, but instead we're just paying his wages while he can't do anything. So are we all right? Can we just sort of say sorry about that? Because it was, you can see what we were going to do, but it didn't work out. But it feels like Leicester have gone clearly far too much to even make this an arguable point that they were being sensible in.
Yeah, you had a little bit of sympathy for Forrest with the Brennan Johnson thing, where it's like, well, we waited a while and we sold him for more. But then the counter-argument was, well, what if he'd got injured in pre-season and then you couldn't have sold him and then you would have been screwed? And to kind of have points deductions hinging on such minor random events doesn't seem very... I'm not sure that's the sustainable part of profit and sustainability, is that the entire future of a football club, you know, Brendan Johnson gets a hamstring strain, he's out for a month, Spurs don't sign him, Forest get an even bigger points deduction, they get relegated, they have to sell more players, they're in League One, all because they didn't sell him by the 30th of June. And then the point that none of this actually prevents what's been going on at Reading, for example, where this is supposed to be like to stop bad owners from running clubs into the ground. Mm. Tony Bloom at Brighton is obviously a good owner, and there doesn't seem to be a problem with him putting all the money he wants into Brighton. Newcastle, I don't think Newcastle would go bust if their owners were allowed to put all the money in they wanted. And Reading, under the current regulations, are as screwed as they would have been if these regulations didn't exist. So none of it is doing anything that it's supposed to do. But the thing with Leicester is that everybody knew what the rules were, and we're within, as far as we know, Leeds United are within PSR. We got relegated, we're trying to get promoted, and all the time we're up against a club that is, by the looks of it, has decided to just get incredibly expensive legal advice. Nick DiMarco, the King's Counsel, is on board, and we'll just get through it that way rather than even try to stay within £100 million of the allowed losses.
You're absolutely right that the rules don't do anything really, because as soon as someone stops paying bills, whether or not a company's losing £100 million or £1 million, if they're reliant on an owner putting that money in, as soon as they stop, then a company goes bust because you're like, well, no one gets paid then, and it becomes an whether or not you're like the allowable losses are fine as long as someone's funding the losses, but as soon as like particularly in the Championship, you're allowed to lose a phenomenal amount of money, and if you're Rotherham losing that amount of money, you are never going to get that back. There's no possible way of ever retrieving the amount of money you're allowed to lose by selling anything. You can sell the stadium, you can sell all of Rotherham, and you'd still be like, we've put the whole city up, and I'm afraid we're still about £100 million short of meeting these debts.
Well, and you've both used the word sensible quite a lot during this conversation, and it's just sensible and football don't often go hand in hand. So that's something fascinating, but I think we need to move on. We don't want to talk about more Leeds things. So we've been nominated for a few of the EFL awards, which seems like a good sign. Hopefully it doesn't jinx us. So Daniel Farke is up for Manager of the Year alongside Kieran McKenna and Liam Rossini.
Why? Why is Liam Rossini in it?
He's done a good job.
Yeah. A tenth.
But it's Hull.
Yeah, but they've spent a bit of money.
Who've they got playing for them? Nick Barmby and...
Yeah.
Don't know.
Dean Windass.
Yeah.
And...
The others. So to get that
Liam
lot...
Liam Cooper.
To get that lot up to 10th.
Now, they spent a fair bit of money in January. They got Carvalho in. They got that left-back from Luton who went off injured.
So...
I think he's doing a shit job. That's what I'm saying.
But the alternatives... you can't nominate Russell Martin because he's a maniac.
Mm.
And then you can't nominate Enzo Maresca because every point that Leicester have earned this season has been not earned. It's been won by cheating.
Yeah. All right. So, Carlos Corbran. He should be in there instead.
You watched West Brom.
They're doing well. They're fifth.
Yeah, but they're not a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, okay.
Who else enough. Do you like? Mark Robbins?
Just looking down the list, actually.
No, thanks.
They
couldn't have put Maresca in there because this is a huge, huge award for us. But for them, it's just another award.
It's another award. It's probably Kieran McKenna, isn't it? Truth be told. I know. Did they decide this before the season's up? Because that's ridiculous if they do. But I mean, whoever goes up probably.
I feel like they do. I feel like it's man of the match. I think Anthony Gordon got given man of the match the other day.
Yeah, and probably got sent off.
Yeah. I think they do it just before.
There was one of it was a weirdly clickbaity article that might even have come out of the Athletic, I think, where they were like rating every Premier League club's season with like six games to go. Like, what is even the fucking point in doing that?
Nothing
like,
decided.
Well, Manchester City have done very well so far. Liverpool also doing pretty well so far. It filled some internet.
But yeah, as we're talking about overspending though, and if you look at points to wage bill, Kieran McKenna is exceeding expectations by an absolute mile.
And like we said at the start, like that. Fair play to him. They keep on grinding results out. Fair play. I think he's done a great job. I just don't like his little head.
We should propose Farker a little bit because he's ours. And also, we do know what it was like here in summer. And if we talk about Liam Rossini maybe overachieving at Hull, there was kind of a feeling in pre-season, and particularly when you look at the lineup from the first couple of games where we had Leo Hjelder at left back, Joffy was starting, Shackleton's in midfield.
Jan Pavada
is going to be our like game-changing number 10. And I think a lot of people kind of went, oh, we don't want to be in the playoffs, but I guess if that's what it's going to be. And then all the stuff about that hopefully we won't need about this being a two-year project.
Yeah.
And it's fine if we don't go up this year, the groundwork, we'll have a plan for next year. So he has overachieved with based on the difficulty of the job. Kieran McKenna has overachieved just based on the blistering wonder of what he has turned Ipswich Town into. Almost, maybe, I don't know, can we hold it? Maybe because I do hold it against him. But it's just got like, oh, it's easy, they just kept winning.
Yeah.
They all seem dead happy.
They're just playing on vibes at this point.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about how many of your players went on strike.
Hmm.
Was Leif Davis trying to get a move to Bournemouth?
In the another category that we are nominated in is Player of the Year from the EFL Awards. Cree Somerville. We didn't settle on a new nickname for him the other day, but he's alongside Kane and Dewsbury Hall and Sammy Smodix. So who described Somerville the other day as the best player in the league? Was that Tom Cleverley?
Yes, I think it might have been.
So, well, if Tom said it, then he must win it. He knows the league, he knows the club, so that's got to be Jimmy's, right? In other categories, Archie is nominated twice. He's somehow nominated as the EFL Championship Apprentice and the Young Player of the Year. That seems
it's like Young Player and Younger Player of the Year, isn't it? And he's in both.
It feels like one should cancel the other out, maybe.
And he should win both too, because the other ones play for Norwich and Birmingham, so...
Yeah, give it a shit.
I mean, realistically.
Yeah. Just quickly, did we see the rumours about Archie and who was watching Archie this week?
thankfully it played terribly.
Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, was it?
Yeah.
Not good. That,
it's not surprising. Well. He's playing very well.
Maybe they just wanted to see him. That was it.
Last night in Leeds.
Yeah, lovely night out in Leeds.
Took your expenses, night in Leeds.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a bit of a, if you are Real Madrid's scout, I've heard of this Archie Gray. I don't know if you've heard of him. I'm going to go and watch, Archie, putting that report in, and hot new prospect, Archie goes like, yeah, we know.
He's played like every game this season. He's quite obvious.
Probably that same scout's been like, I don't know if you've heard of him, but I can't remember what Jude Bellingham's brother's called, so this is falling down.
Job.
Yeah. Did you know Jude's got a brother? Like, yes, we did. Go watch what they should be watching. I just wanted to do a tip of the hat for the Player of the Year nominations. Sammy Smodic fascinates me because, what is he? He's 28. Never heard of him before this season because we were in the Premier League and he obviously was not.
I've got to say, we were not in the Premier League for most of his life.
Well, even so, I've somehow just got to this stage of the 21st century without encountering him. 38 games, 23 goals, 4 assists. He's like Blackburn's Ross McCormack.
I was going to say that. Yeah, he's putting up some great numbers.
Confusing as well. He's from Colchester, sounds Hungarian, plays for Ireland. Confusing old setup of names and places there.
And I love that about him.
Yeah.
I'm quite taken with when you just find a weird little footballer doing these strange things. He wears number 8 as well, which I think is correct.
Yeah.
So he's got the right squad number.
Got the Michael Bridges.
Yeah, we should sign him.
I think of it as the Rod Wallace, you see.
That's right. A generation thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the best nomination for me that's coming out of the EFL Awards is for Annie Cochran for the EFL Club Employee. Do we know who Annie Cochran is? I had to Google her, but then, of course, I knew immediately who she was.
Catering department.
It says here on a YEP article that she is 83 years old and has no plans to retire from Dream Ellen Road job.
I think that was I saw that article too. I think that was quite a few years ago too. So
2018.
Yeah, yeah.
Maths.
Really old.
Let's go quick. How old is she now?
Older than she was.
89 now she is. Great. Give her the keys to the city. I love that.
She's also had to put up with Massimo Cellino muscling into that kitchen at some point and forcing his pasta sauce on the players.
Rudy Austin's face. Yeah. Still.
I wonder if she can play left back.
Absolutely fuming about that pasta, wasn't he?
Let's touch on the under-18s. Under-18s are playing...
Hang on. We need to talk about the League One manager of the year.
Yeah, because this is a disgrace.
Who are we rooting for
apologies.
Here?
Apologies, right.
Well,
yes.
I mean, you were angry about Liam Rosinia with Hull.
Got Steve Evans up against Darren Ferguson and John Mousinho, who it turns out is the Portsmouth manager.
Right, and so...
Sounding a bit like a very English Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I thought that was a typo.
And so Steve Evans is managing who?
Stevenage.
Right, and where are they in League One?
Playoffs-ish.
They are 8th.
By the way, Hull, I had a look, pre-season, they were 8th favourites for the league and the 10th. Well done, Liam, brilliant.
Well, the same applies with Steve Evans. What has he done for, like, getting Stevenage to 8th is good?
It's decent.
It's terrible, and he's a terrible person.
He's got nice eyelashes.
No, he doesn't.
Are we not factoring that in?
I'm glad. So Portsmouth, John Mousinho, they are at least...
They're top.
They're top of the league, so that counts, and... Maybe this is how they're doing it. That doesn't work with us because they've got the guy who's top of the league and then there's Darren Ferguson, Peterborough are in the playoffs and then there must be just like a best loser award where they're like, well, you're not actually going to do anything this year, but I suppose you'd provided some content for the EFL show on ITV or something.
An outside bet.
Yeah. Just give it to, I don't know anything about John Mousinho, but Evans and Ferguson... No.
No, yeah. So our vote is officially going to the English Mourinho.
That's the one.
Official? Okay, good. I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. So tonight, yes, Leeds United under-18s play Millwall, Ellen Road. Over 10,000 expected. Chance to reach the FA Youth Cup final for the first time since 1997. This had completely passed me by until the semi-final stage, I think. This is exciting, though. Of course, we've got to play the behemoth that is Man City if we get through into the final. But this seems nice.
The FA Youth Cup used to be a bigger thing. I think it's because there was a time when you didn't hear, because of the internet, you didn't hear about all the stuff the youth team was doing all the time. And I think the FA Youth Cup was like the one bit you did hear about. So when you did well in it, it was like, oh, reached the final.
I do wonder if that's your, because how old were you in 1997?
Yeah, I was like a child.
Yeah, and then so
it was had. It was probably just relevant to me.
And we've had a bit of a relationship with the youth cup since 1993 because the year after we won the league, we finished 17th, respectable. Mm-hmm. Not what anybody wanted, but it was fine. In fact, it was awful. But the one bright point was that some of the youth teams started playing, well, basically bailing us out of being the champions and getting relegated towards the end of that season, and then played Scum in the final. Famous for the second leg and Noel Whelan's flick on, Jamie Forrester's overhead kick. I immediately bought a pair of Seeker Blades because those were the boots that Jamie Forrester was wearing. And the footage of that, you can see, I think it's Mark Ford was the captain. And as he's going up to collect the trophy in the West Stand, like he's just being mobbed by girls. And it just looked, it's such a funny, and it was the other thing about it was because it was the biggest crowd of the season at Elland Road because it was pretty much the first time that the East Stand, still under construction, had been opened.
They just let people into a building site, didn't they, more or less?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Put some high-vis on.
So that meant that when 4 years later, when Eddie Gray was taking them to, it was the, no, the Pontins League was the reserves back in the year after. But this was, it was the team of Robinson and Woodgate and Hart and McPhail and...
Well done for not mentioning Kew.
Thank you. It's it was deliberate. And
Alan Mabry.
Yep, and Lee Matthews, who scored goal after goal after goal, which I think that the goal, the winning goal that Lee Matthews scored was from a cross by Stephen McPhail. And I've always wanted to ask Lee Matthews because he went on and did a lot of goals for Bristol City, but never quite hit the heights again. It's like, how many assists did Stephen McPhail actually give you? Because I think McPhail was the kind of player, just a joy to be a striker if he's on the wing, as he was at that time.
How were the Seeker Blades, by the way?
They were pretty, you know, things that you have that require constant explanation.
I'm wondering if I had a pair of these as well.
Yeah, because the thing about them was that they were the first boots that didn't have studs.
Yeah.
They had blades instead, which is not quite as knifey as it sounds. Mm. They were just molded. But yeah, having to constantly, people are like, what are those?
Which, Chris Akabusi sold them to me.
Which on one hand is like pretty thrilling, but then also when you're actually rubbish at football, it's like, oh wow, you've got some pretty impressive boots there. Like, yep, that's where it ends. But yeah, they didn't do me.
Chris Akabusi did promote Seeker, not the blades, obviously, because he was a runner. But he was like a brand ambassador or something,
yeah,
for them, wasn't
I think
he?
So.
Okay, good. I'm glad I remembered that properly.
And Jamie Forrester, like Lee Matthews, another one who didn't quite make it at Leeds, but he became a Dutch league and lower English league scoring legend. Grimsby and Scunthorpe, just goal after goal after goal. Total thrill fest. So that's what we've got to look forward to from these lads taking on me war.
Yeah, and we'll see what kind of players emerge from that team. And it says here that for the 2023-24 season, a player must have been born on or after the 1st of September 2005 and before the 1st of September 2008.
So I'm going to expect to see toddlers.
Yeah.
Attending this game. Because it's going to be awful.
It's 2014, isn't it?
Are they playing now on the full-size pitch? Ridiculous. The reason I actually found that was because I was trying to work out why the final seemed to be played at Man City. It's just because they draw it.
Oh,
it seems to be a thing where they just have a draw for the final and you play at one of the teams. So it's at Man City if we get through. But yeah, that was in the competition rules bit. I saw that. And you know, something you have to read twice. You're like, but that was
yesterday.
That's really recent. So how are they?
I think it's why Harry Gray isn't playing in this tournament. It's because he wasn't old enough for the rules. Mm. So anybody of the 10,000 people who are going to Elland Road to watch this on Thursday night, excited to see another Gray. No,
not so much.
He might be there.
Yeah,
watching.
And also, who played tonight? The LUFC women's team. This was a rearranged game at bottom of the league. FC United and Manchester. Their season's pretty much finished though, because there's only one team that go up from that division, right?
Yeah, and it's not going to be them.
Bless them.
Yes.
Again.
So Flora's been writing about them on the website, and it has been the theme for a while of like, we're just getting everything in place for next season.
Yep.
Going to get some good momentum for next season. And then also Flora wrote last week about hopefully next season the club will cotton on and at least a game at Elland Road.
Yeah.
And maybe learn a little from what Newcastle United did at this level, because it is step four, and as you say, with only one promotion place, very difficult to get out of. So what Newcastle did was put in the comparatively modest amount of money that it takes to hoover up all the talented players at that level, get promoted, and then I don't know where they are in step three at the moment, but they got to a cup final this year as well, and they've managed to generate the interest so that their games at St James's Park, when they've played relatively frequently, have
top.
Got right. So they're they're on the way up into the Championship, and then they're a step away from WSL, which is the top tier. And their games, when they play at St James's Park, are getting 10,000, 11,000 in. And it feels like a bit of a miss so far since the takeover, which came with a bit of optimism. But because women's football is such a big deal in the United States, WSL there being a very major league. And
is it big in Saudi Arabia, given the Newcastle owners are so into it?
No, but it's a very good thing to align yourself with in the United Kingdom, if you want people to not pay too much attention to the situation in your own country. But the felt like there's like, right, cool, 49ers, they must have some good ideas to kickstart the women's team and build on the excitement of the Euros and the World Cup and everything, and not much sign of it so far. So at least a game at Allen Road next season would, because, you know, there's 10,000 going along to watch the under-18s. And when they have played at Allen Road in recent seasons, the women have got good attendances. And that was pre the 31-7, pre the Euros win that kicked off so much more interest. And it's, even though it would have been great to just do it straight away after that, like, wow, England have won the Euros, let's get everybody into this at Allen Road and have another big party. Didn't bother with that. But then it's never too late.
Yes. So come on, Angus, come on, Parag. Next season, at least one game at Allen Road, please.
I want you to replace all of those players. That's what Moscow's saying. Kick them all out.
No, to build upon the fine foundations that they built. And they have been, it's on the pitch, they're the immediate problem of the manager after one game going to become assistant manager at West Ham. Mm-hmm. So I think that took a lot of the momentum out, and the players have done very well to get as close to promotion as they have this season, but it is just it's a hard old slog in that league, and there would be ways that the club could make it easier for them.
Certainly.
And then start reaping the rewards.
Certainly. So let's hope for a couple of very triumphant Leeds United wins tonight in the under-18s and LUFC women, sending us Leeds United's first men's team into the weekend in great spirits ahead of Coventry.
Could still play Archie Gray in the Youth Cup. Get him an extra game, that's what I say. Make him work for it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, so for part two of the weekly show, we move and we assemble the square ball jury. I have Dan's gavel. Apparently, he's been neglecting this recently. Mm. So I'm an actor. I want a prop. So I've got it. So court is in session.
Yeah.
Thank you. We are going to award the Ken Bates Villain of the Week first, as is customary. So, Michael, I'm going to come to you. Who are you nominating this week?
Tom Cleverley, because Watford have not been very good all year, and they turned up at Elland Road and were awful. Then we went down there and they looked quite decent, which annoyed me. And mainly, though, it's because he used to play for England all the time when he was at Scum, and I used to hate it.
Yeah.
And I'm just a grudge I've held. Yeah. And I think it's perfectly acceptable.
It is. And there are people who've messaged in from the members who have agreed with you, Dickie Wood and Nathan. Nathan saying, Cleverley and his Scummer accent, take Crescencio's name out of your mouth. Which I tend to agree with. Leave him alone. He's our lovely little boy.
I'd forgotten he was a Bradford City prick as well, as pointed out by Dickie Wood. Did he play for him, or was he just... He might have been there as a kid, I think, and then Scum nicked him or something.
Well, you said you've forgotten, so you must be able to remember.
Could be in there,
I don't know. I didn't know I had anything to do with Bradford City.
Yeah, he's from there, isn't he? It's the way Scum do it, isn't it? They pretend they've got like a really good youth policy, but they've just nicked half of them from places.
Yeah.
Not that we'd ever do that. Fab Del.
Fab Del.
Fab Del belonged at Leeds.
He did.
He liked it. He was glad to join. Whereas, he definitely is from Bradford's youth team, is Tom Cleverley. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, his 13 England caps should be wiped from the record.
Fair enough.
Because he was a real... Watford is about right for him. Mm. I know he played there two spells, knows the club. Three spells, technically, actually, looking at his wiki, because he had a loan 2009-10, then a loan 2017, but then he did sign from 2017 at 2013. So I'm counting that as three spells. So he knows it thrice.
And it's just annoying. I mean, I seem to remember a clip on Propaganda a few years ago where I think it was an Arsenal fan who was bemoaning the fact they had to play a team with a new manager and they had the new manager bounced. Yes. Remember this?
Mm. He was saying it should be banned, wasn't he?
It should be banned. It's annoying. Like, yeah, they've been shit all season. I went to the game at Elland Road. We twatted them 3-0. It was easy. Mm. And then they dare to turn up. How dare you?
And I'm trying to remember, did he say it should be banned or it should be mandatory? That you should just like keep sacking a manager and hire a new one whenever you wanted to win a game.
No, I think that was you guys who prophesized that might be the way forward. every game.
Yeah, I think maybe he was saying you shouldn't be able to change manager during the season, was it?
I mean,
would make it quite funny because things would get really, really toxic at places and people would be like, cast out me.
I've been an advocate of everybody should, like with transfer windows, you have to build your squad before the season. And then you're just stuck with it.
Yeah.
So if you extend it to managers, maybe you can only promote from within or whatever, or the one person just has to sit there.
Or maybe on both players and manager, you're allowed to get someone new in, but they must have zero. They must be a thorough amateur, zero experience. So you can pluck someone off a park.
Dave Hockaday.
Dave Hockaday. Even Dave Hockaday.
He'd be back in work. He'd have a job every season.
No, because having done it once, he did it at Leeds and then he'd be excluded from people would be like, you manage Leeds. I'm afraid that counts against.
Well, if it's got to be a fan.
Could work.
Could sack your manager, but you've got to replace it. Somebody, there's a ballot and you just draw lots and you just end up with.
I sometimes wonder if it'd be that different.
Some maniac from the back of the West Stand.
Like, are you telling me that a random person from the Cop wouldn't have done as good a job as Dave Hockaday at just picking a team? Because it was half Chileno anyway.
When we played, was it last season when we had those mid-season friendlies? Monaco, there was a guy in the West Stand who's kept, it's a friendly, talk to each other, Leeds. It's like, he seemed like he would want that job and he could do it. It was good advice.
Talk to each other and get stuck in the two basics you need.
He actually, I was trying to remember the thing he shouted that confused me was at one point he just went, it's not a WhatsApp group.
That's just angry at the modern world, isn't
it? I didn't know what his problem.
Get off TikTok!
Stop texting each other.
On Cleverley, I think I'm supposed to argue against you.
Yes.
Vehemently.
You're someone else.
So you're wrong.
All right, yeah.
And I hate you because of it.
Are you going for Liam Cooper, as Jake from Florida did?
But no, but actually I was going to support you, because the thing with Tom Cleverley, he's not even going to be there very long, because he lost his first game, won his second, and then they drew 2-2 with us, and then they drew 2-2 with West Brom. He's probably won. I know he knows the club, and we're going to have stability from within. If he doesn't get a result against Preston, I think he's sacked, isn't he? Watford aren't going to put up with two draws and a defeat out of four games, even if they did beat Birmingham. It's just, he won't be there long enough to be mad about.
But the longevity of Watford managers is just, there isn't that maniac we had on propaganda saying that, yeah, give him the contract, put it down in front of him, get it signed. No, it's never going to happen.
I was listening to Football Cliches yesterday and it was studio talk, which I'd missed because I never listened to the halftime stuff, but Troy Deeney calling Nigel Pearson gaffer and saying, was he in charge long enough to warrant gaffer? I completely forgotten he'd even been in charge.
At Watford?
Mm.
Yeah. Was he...
I don't know when it was.
Was he not on the receiving end of the playoff game that we were talking about? No, it was Zola.
It was Zola.
Just by probability, he's going to have had the job. I'm surprised one of us three haven't had the job. Like, it's bound to happen.
It was... Oh, I'm trying to work out when it was. It's very... Oh, there he is.
I have a feeling he might have done it twice.
He's on the list there between Kike Sanchez-Flores and Vladimir Ivic?
Of course.
No idea.
Yeah, remember it very well.
Moscow, who Ipswich. Are you going to send up for us? Yeah.
Ipswich.
Uh-huh.
And Leif Davies. I'm just kind of getting this in because it seems like the opportunity. I don't actually dislike Ipswich. I'm a long-standing fan of the concept and the reality of Romeo Zondervan. And they've always had quite fascinating sponsors up until the current kind of Ed Sheeran dalliance that I don't really care for. And the way that they are going about everything, the surge through last season, the unexpected, they were tipped to do well this season, but nobody put them being top of the league with six games to go. What seems to be very exciting football, so that's good. And then they let us have 6 points and 8 goals. So that was also very generous of them. So there's lots of things about Ipswich Town that this season I like and I admire and I wish them well. And I was saying on propaganda, I'm half serious. I think if they get promoted, top half Premier League, qualify for Europe. Yeah. I don't think it's impossible. Just one of those stories that is like a fairy tale. However, I wish they'd fucking not.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
The basis of the argument is just stop it, please.
Yeah. Finish. Just, I don't know how I feel about us finishing. Like, it's not a big club, little club thing. It's nothing to do with that. I'd like us to win the league because we didn't get to celebrate it when we won it in 2020. Mm. No problem with finishing second behind Ipswich in terms of just earning it. Like, if they win more points, then they absolutely deserve it. But I would like it. I would like us to be champions so we can have an open top bus. Liam Cooper can wave the trophy around with some people watching. And then, you know, his contract is up in the summer. So then whatever happens. Same with Dallas Nailing, we get to have the party that we didn't have. So that's what I would like us to do. So Ipswich are very, very welcome to finish second. And if they finish first, they deserve it. However, maybe it's more Leicester's fault. I wish we could, it would be nice if we could just sort this out now.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned Ipswich sponsors, by the way. Who should they be sponsored by?
Radio Orwell.
Oh, see, I'm a Fison's man.
Fison's is the classic, particularly because it's confusing. What is a Fison?
Yeah.
What does it do? How do you pronounce it?
I've only just learnt now what it is. It was.
It's chemicals, isn't it?
It was a British multinational pharmaceutical, scientific instruments and horticultural chemicals company.
There we go.
Headquartered in Ipswich.
It's really fucking stupid, the things that as a football fan you learn.
Become aware of.
Geography and obscure businesses, just like factories making pharmaceuticals.
See, it's kind of lost now, a lot of that, isn't it? Because it's just a bookmaker that doesn't exist anymore a lot of the time when you look back at shirts from recent years.
But I bet that chemical company
was my favourite, the best fertilisers of the 90s, those guys.
And absolutely made, stored and disposed of in East Anglia in no doubt a safe, environmentally sound way.
Yes, very much so. So we have on the docket so far, we've got Tom Cleverley and we've got the concept of Ipswich. Anything else to throw in there before we make our final judgment?
I mean, Somerville did get a fair few nominations because of the penalty carry-on and that some people didn't like misbehaving when bathing, didn't like, so not just for stealing the penalty and going against the gaffer and the pecking order, but for taking his shirt off after scoring to show it to the camera. Fuck off with that nonsense.
Mm. Yeah.
So next you'll be sat in Sue and some other stuff.
Redacted. I don't know how I feel. I'm still a little bit, I almost think about it the other way. Because there's no doubt that Somerville was the designated penalty taker because he started the game. Yeah. And then so who does Joe Pirou think he is?
Well, Pat Bamford right foot has said this. Pirou, you can't go on and instantly take the pen, mate. Grow up.
So there was a bit of, and that might be why it took Somerville so long to come over and get involved. Like, what What does Joel think he's doing?
Mm.
I'm the penalty taker. I started the game. I've been out here for 85 minutes grinding. I won the penalty. Who's this guy?
I was wondering, actually, I've not seen enough angles of it. I wonder if maybe Farker had got a message onto the pitch to say, Jimmy, it's yours. And that's why he came over so late. I don't think
he did, because I was keeping an eye on him from the gantry. Ting, ding, ding. Oh, you were very well prepared.
Thank you.
And Roden came over to get some water, but there was not the same panic as when, what was the last game at Elland Road where everyone was in a big flap about who was taking the penalty? And then
Preston, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was Ampadu was running over to Farker and Farker was doing his nut and then he went running back. There was none of that. It was just kind of, they'll sort this out. And yeah, and the shirt off stuff. I think some players just, like, they have their kind of mission, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think Somerville is one and he likes to be. I also think he's been underwhelming during the 100 games that we went undefeated. And I think at Watford and then with this, I think there might be a little bit of like, no, I'm back. I'm going to start. I'm playing well now. This is my time. The rest of the season, I'm going to step up in a way that he's obviously been trying to, like a lot of stuff he's been trying to during the last few months has not been coming off.
Mm.
And now he's like, yes, ball's going in. I'm taking penalties. Joel Pirou, never heard of him. Shirt off. I did feel, yeah, the yellow card. I don't like the yellow business because I was trying to work out if he was close to a suspension because that would be quite depressing. If then.
Yeah.
But yeah, fair enough.
I think, and as well, I don't know if this will read with a lot of Leeds fans, but as long as you're playing well, I think you can be a bit cocky. Take your shirt off, you're scoring goals. I don't mind it because it's all in pursuit of promotion, hopefully.
Yeah, you said promotion in a whole way then.
I did. I thought I'd just throw it in there. anything else to add?
Two cheap shots. Elton John, yep. Wedge nominates him only because I'm still singing. I'm still standing due to the post-game music. Does acknowledge it is a banger, which is true. Unconnected, Reese's mum. He nominated by Reese himself, who was watching the game and saw the Somerville goal and said he was too good to stay at Leeds for long.
Cheers, mother.
Which is great. A bit like the whole boy's mum. Thoroughly miserable. Louis Hoyle, nominated by Grumpy Kev for rolling about when that big bruiser Joseph smashed him. I mean, he did go off with like a broken back afterwards, so maybe the rolling around was justified. And Dan nominated as well for leaving us, but his younger, more handsome second cousin to fill in.
Yes.
Which is you, I believe.
That's my handle there, Sam, not Byron. That was my comment. So.
And West Ham fans were being mean. The bubble nonces, as Mal describes them, for being mean to Calvin.
Yeah, there's also whoever hurts Gruev and Yonto.
Yes.
But then FIFA in general for forcing them to play games.
So who are we giving this to? This feels quite strong for Ipswich, I've got to say.
Yeah, I think Ipswich is fair enough, actually. Because they're just, fuck off, please.
We need to just get it in.
Respectfully.
Yes.
Because I kind of appreciate what you're doing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But at the same time, give it fucking rest, eh?
Yeah, we'll do it now so that at the end of the season when they've won the league by 10 clear points, we can just be like, well, well done. Go. Fair enough. This is the point where we can just tell them to fucking not do that.
So there we go. It is done. This week's Ken Bates Villain of the Week goes to the concept of Ipswich. I sentence you to 6 games doing fuck all, please. Thank you so much. So that we move now on to the Catano Berardi Hero of the Week. Before we do, though, we'll just check in with some scores on Player of the Year. So for Watford, quite a low spread, I would say. We've got Matteo Joseph, Crescencio Somerville and Joe Rodon all scoring over 7, but then we're swimming down, you know, right the way through to 3.57 for poor old Liam Cooper. That probably reflects what we saw on the pitch, right?
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It's
been a good week for Rodon and Somerville, hasn't it?
Yes. So going into Hull, Rodon and Somerville came out on top, 7.59 and 7.49 respectively. Dan James, Sam Byram all achieving over 7, and Rutter, Melier, Joseph all reaching up there. So as far as Player of the Year award goes, still very tight at the top. There's not much separating the top. What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh no, that's Chris Clarsen at 9.
Chris Clarsen in with a chance still. You never know.
James, Rutter, Farker, Gray, Somerville, Ampadu, and Rodon at the top still. I think that passes the eye test. He's been brilliant, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Even I think with his back spasms.
He's got plenty of nominations this week as well. Speaking of Berardi, he sat very briefly in this chair I'm in. He popped in to say hello at the weekend. He was at the game. I don't know if anyone, he didn't get him on the picture, and did he? He's quite shy, isn't he? He's not really into that sort of stuff, but he was nice enough to pop in here.
Did he choose that seat? Or did you choose it for him?
Sit in it.
Can you feel his power emanating now through your buttocks?
Just two handsome guys sat in a seat. in the same seat. That's all it is.
There was somebody, because that photo went on Twitter, and somebody replied,
did it? I'd completely missed that.
Saying, has Moscow had a shave? Which is possibly the most flattering thing anybody has ever said to me. It's actually the second time I have been mistaken for Brady, because some people thought that my stylized...
I think maybe you failed to pick up on some sarcasm there.
No, it was sincere. My Twitter profile picture, somebody also, after I had it for a while, I went, oh, I always thought that was a picture of Gaetano Berardi.
People often pass me in the street and say, Pascal, would you sign my shirt?
They meant it.
Okay. They meant it.
Okay.
They did.
Okay.
I'll shave this off and then you'll see.
You'll all see. Right, let's get some nominations for the Gaetano Berardi Hero of the Week Award. Quite a lot of heroes to go on, I reckon. Moscow, start with you. Who are you gonna pick out?
Namesake time, Daniel James.
Daniel James. Why so?
The reasons are obvious. Having just been sticking up for Somerville's kind of ostentatious approach to the game, it's also nice. Football and life is about contrast, isn't it? To have little Dan James, the scum bastard himself, diminutively tootling around on the wings at top speed and scoring from 50 yards. And it's because, what a bad week for him.
Yes.
What a great... I mean, I don't know. Does scoring from 50 yards with what was essentially a meaningless goal, because, you know, third goal of a 3-1 win, make up for not going to the Euros at all?
But it might not be meaningless, because that goal is very tight. That goal could be, you know, goal difference might be key towards the end of the season.
True. And yes, so if it does come down to one goal difference, we'll make sure that Daniel knows.
Yes.
That was the goal. But I think Farker referred to it at one point, that it's kind of the Welsh players coming back, and I guess nobody cares about Glenn Kamara not qualifying, but that not making it to the Euros probably, like, it's a bigger deal than you maybe imagine, because on the one hand, your summer is going to be, and they had the group was all organised, so I don't think it looked pretty hard, the teams they were up against. But yeah, you're going to be away in Germany.
Yep.
And you're going to be playing this team and that team, and you're going to be away with your mates. So even if it's not, even if you don't win all the games, you have a great holiday and you have loads of fun, and summer's going to be superb, and you get to represent your country, and like all the fans get to go. And then, yeah, this sounds like I'm absolutely ruining Dan James. And then you, Dan James, with the opportunity to make all that happen. But, you know, Kiefer Moore should have just scored, shouldn't he, in normal time?
Yeah.
So it's not Dan James' fault. But anyway, all that pressure, all that upset. And I noticed from one of the photos of Dan James, it must be just after he scored. And sometimes you underrate how quickly players can move, because Roden set that up after blocking a shot that Rutter set up for Hull, unhelpfully, and then was busy celebrating with the South Stand as Joel Pirou was putting Dan James down the line. And then one of the first photos of Dan James celebrating has Joe Roden arriving. Great. With his broken back. You know, we worry about Louis Coyle, but he seems to have broken his own back just sleeping. Or maybe, do you think Joe Roden sleeps? I don't imagine he sleeps much.
Probably can't with all the painkillers.
So
he's in a cat hole.
And so he still managed to get out of his K-hole all the way to celebrate with Dan James. I think there must have been a little bit of like, we are all feeling better about being Welsh.
We are as one. And he had to be very patient as well, Dan James. We went down the left a lot to Somerville, but when that moment came, I tweeted the other day as well, the ball that Pirou played to James was perfect. It was right in his stride, but he still had a lot to do, and he absolutely took it. So Dan James is on the docket. Michael, who are you going to nominate?
I feel like Matteo Joseph is due one, because that Watford game was very, very difficult. And the thing of scoring, I feel like in a week I might have seen two almost like Leeds records of quickest a sub has scored and furthest out goal. Trying to think of it, I can't think of any subs who've scored in less time, because he literally just ran on the pitch and put it in the net, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, Ginger Paul and Pablo's grumpy misses are alluding to that as well. They nominated Joseph best sub to goal time in my memory, and Matteo Joseph for being a jammy git when we needed it, and we did need it.
And I like Whiskey Omega describes his bull in a china shop playing, which I do enjoy when he comes on, and just, he looks like he wants to make an impact. He's like a he's like a higher quality Ryan Edmondson. You remember when he came on and was just like a big adrenalized child and just like started lamping people? Matteo Joseph is like that, but with a little bit more quality. So it's nice to see an actual Bamford alternative off the bench, because we've not had one for
ever.
Really. Bamford was in the team, and then when he wasn't, it was like Tyler Roberts, Dan James,
John Kevin Augustin,
Eddie Nketiah. It was never him. Yeah, Eddie Nketiah. But they, no one did quite the same leading the line job, did they?
Since Kamal Roof.
Yeah, and even he was not. He wasn't really a number nine, was he? In a lot of ways, he was kind of. He would have traditionally been a second striker, but he also did stuff. So it kind of worked.
Another nomination on the sheet here from Sam Not Byram is for Hull City. It says here, gained a lot of respect for the club, owners and fans, how they handled everything, which I think is probably a reference as well to the Chris and Kev moment of reflection before the kickoff and then on the 24th minute. And fair play to him. I thought the Hull fans were good on the whole. Like they sang their hearts out, but in those moments, they gave it the reverence that it deserved, right?
Yeah, because it's one of those things that you think, almost certainly away fans will be okay with it, but I feel like there's been a little bit of trouble with Hull fans over the years with this stuff. I remember an away game when there was some things chanted, and it's always like, apart from Millwall, it's always a very small number of people doing it, but it's the sort of thing that can spoil an occasion like this. But it was very well observed, and the applause during the game was excellent, I thought.
It's always a one dickhead situation, because one dickhead can escalate things so that the whole thing is ruined. So to get through it with zero dickheads is actually, it's sad to say that it's very impressive, but it is very impressive. And yeah, it made sure that what should have been a good moment was a good moment.
Yeah.
And that we can come out of it at the end of it saying, I'm trying not to do the Bruce Forsyth voice, but didn't everybody do well rather than being angry that something went wrong? So a rare, particularly when there's so much kind of, there's a lot of attention on tragedy chanting, quite rightly. And that has had the adverse reaction with, I mean, it feels like a new thing that like Scum fans are going out and having shirts printed with stuff on the back to wind other people up on social media rather than even in the stadium, because those encounters just don't happen. In that sort of wider climate of people being horrible to each other, for this to actually work is didn't happen by accident. Hull did a lot of work to make sure that happened. Leeds also made sure those messages were out there. But everybody heard, acknowledged, understood, and acted in a really good way.
They certainly did.
But they still don't get a hero. They don't win hero.
No, of course not. Of course not. But it was good to mention. And also in the wider context there, so it wasn't just the Hull City fans. It was their players. It was their staff. And the dickhead ref, Josh Smith, did the right thing, stopped it, and then let us have our moment. So it's not going to be them, but who's it going to be? Who do we reckon?
Dan James, obviously.
I'm willing to accept it if you'll broaden it to the Welsh, because Roden's also had a very good week. He's injured too.
What about the other Welsh?
Ampadu.
Connor Roberts. I suppose if you've seen
they'd looked at camera.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So I suppose Connor has contributed. I do feel a little bit sorry for Glenn Kamara in all this.
Because he's also not in the Euros and sick as a dog. And no one cares.
Nobody gives a fuck.
And he had to do 70 minutes of dragging himself around the pitch.
Yeah. So are we including all our failing sons?
Okay. Anyone not going to the Euros?
Pat Bamford is included.
Okay, fine.
Because he's probably not going to get into Southgate's squad.
Mm. I'm not going to include Pat Bamford in this.
Liam Cooper trying to play his way out of it for Scotland.
But I'm going to allow our four beautiful Welsh boys and Glenn Kamara, because even though he didn't play in that decider, he didn't get to that decider.
No.
So we're going to give it to, how did you describe it? The failing sons.
Yes, or fail sons.
And it is done. The failing sons win this week's Gaetano Berardi Hero of the Week award. I sentence them to never fail again, hopefully in a Leeds United shirt. Okay, that is the end of this week's weekly show. Thank you if you've been watching on YouTube, and thank you if you've been listening across any of the podcast platforms. We'll be back later with some news catch-up and some pre-Coventry preview with Phil. But yes, thank you so much. We will speak to you later. Goodbye.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itsinas.
Kayla Itsinas. I'm Kayla Itsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.